you are causing artists to have panic attacks. You are causing them to not be able to market their music. And that is the wrong tactic. Like that right. is the same mentality that all the labels had in the early 2000s during Napster era of suing the fans.
At the fundamental core for artists and even creators of all sorts of fields, it is a tool that they need, they're using to get themselves out there. What used to be playing open mic nights every single night in your local city, maybe in the early 2000s, is now using TikTok to find the audience. Like, it is a tool.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. The third edition is out now everywhere. Audiobook, hardcover, ebook, however you like to consume books, you can find the book anywhere you find books. Today, my guest is Jamie D. Hart. She is the founder and CEO of Hart and Songs, an artist and rights management firm based in LA. Now, she's also an artist manager, and she manages the artist Ryan Nealon, who we spend a bit of time talking about. He's a singer-songwriter. And she also manages the chill electronic producer Charisma, who has over 100 million streams across all DSPs. We spend most of the time talking about royalty collection and rights management, and just basically how to get your money. And we spent a good portion discussing YouTube, because I feel like this is an overlooked part of the industry, and we don't really spend a lot of time we discussing how to get your money from YouTube, because it's different from how to get your money from Spotify or Apple Music and Tidal and the rest of the DSPs out there. So she breaks it down and does a really great job of breaking it down. But then we also talk about how TikTok and Instagram are paying and Facebook paying and all of that stuff, how to get your money from that. And then we talked about, of course, the kind of what's going on in the landscape of TikTok. And after Universal has pulled so much of their music from TikTok, and how independent artists are getting caught up in all of this, even if they're not signed to Universal or they're not signed to any label at all, how and why their songs are being removed from TikTok. Like her artist, Ryan Nealon, he had one of his biggest songs with a major viral moment. Actually, today, the song got muted and the video got muted and the song got removed from TikTok. And so she breaks down why that happened and what's going on in the space. And we spent a bit of time, you'll hear, it gets a little bit heated, not between us, but I go off a little bit. So you can stick around and hear my ranting on what I think about the whole situation towards the end. So if you're down to learn about royalties and how to get your money and you want to educate yourself a little bit, this is the episode for you. I do want to give a shout out to Ari's Take Academy. If you really want to get your stuff buttoned up and you want to learn how to register your music, how to collect all of your money, how to release it properly, visit aristakeacademy.com and check out the registration, royalties, and release course. You can apply for that and you can learn all about that. You can check out Jamie DeHart on all of the socials. Her Instagram is instagram.com/Jamie, JAMIEDEEHART. You can find Hart and Songs at heartandsongs.com. That's Hart spelled H-A-R-T. Get it? Play on kind of her name. You can find all of us that make the show happen at Ari's Take on all the socials. Well, Instagram, TikTok, X, Threads. You can find me at Ari Herstand on Instagram. Visit ariestake.com, get on the email list. That's where you're going to get the most up-to-date, relevant info about the new music business. We'll let you know when new episodes come out, and anything that you need to know about in the new music business, we'll let you know, but only if you're on that email list. But right now, if you could just pause this episode and leave us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or however you listen to this. If you're on YouTube, give us that thumbs up. Hit subscribe, hit follow. Make sure that we come into your feed. All right. Well, let's kick into the show. Jamie DeHart, welcome to the show.
Hey, super stoked to be here.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to talk about something that is arguably the most important part of the music industry. However, unfortunately, one of the most boring parts of the music industry and parts of the industry that so many artists and songwriters and producers roll their eyes at or get overwhelmed by or just don't really want to pay attention to because it's confusing, it's not fun, and that is rights management, that is registration, that is royalty collection. And before anyone listening hits next on their podcast app or hits the next one, stick with us because I promise it's going to be really important. So, Jamie, tell me what you do at Heart & Songs because let me just read the description of your website. It says, Heart & Songs is an artist development company specializing in artist and music rights management. What does that mean?
Yeah, definitely. So we all know artist management, so that's a pretty self-explanatory part of what my business does. But the other part is music rights management. So this is quite literally in all senses of physical streaming digital rights management. And rights can pertain to sound recording, you know, composition, publishing, even sometimes audiovisual rights. There are so many things that can, you know, be grouped in together with that. But at the basic core is really ensuring that the copyrights are out there and they're getting collected for correctly and, you know, protecting your copyright at the end of the day, whether you're an artist, writer, producer, you know, there's so many different types of creators that have rights to be collected for online.
What does that mean, protecting your copyright? Tell me more about that.
No, I think a huge, my favorite example in this is on YouTube. YouTube has Content ID. Many times if there is a song that's distributed through any distributor, maybe CD Baby, TuneCore, all of the gamut, they also deliver the sound recording to YouTube in order for the, you know, rights holder, the artist, to collect on that, which also means if there are YouTube channels out there, you know, using their music in a vlog or something, protecting it is kind of being like, okay, I know that this is out there, it's being claimed. And it's also being collected for, because many times in like compilation videos on YouTube, you know, they really try to pick the songs that they think that won't get a copyright claim. And so in that case, I've had a lot of conversations with artists. They're like, but I don't want my music to be being collected for. We don't want ads on where like my music is because people won't like that. The user experience will be bad. And then I tell them, okay, the alternative, what if someone else is collecting for your copyright?
Right. So my favorite is, so we had Kristen Robinson on the show. She's a writer for Billboard, and she did this investigative report called, the title is How Did Two Unknown Latin Music Operators Make $23 million from YouTube? The IRS says they stole it. And so to your point, and it's a great piece if anyone has not read it, and if you haven't checked it out, go read this article from Kristen Robinson and or listen to the episode we had her on the show here where she talks all about it. But that's exactly right, is if you don't claim it as an artist or a songwriter, somebody else can swoop in and claim it and keep the money, essentially stealing your money. And the money is out there, and it's, and if you don't go get it, someone else may and steal it from you.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge point. And then when I've talked to artists, you know, I've talked to a lo-fi artist who had a huge, you know, a lot of people loved using his beats in YouTube videos. And he was just like, no, I really don't want to collect it. And it took me only five minutes to find a couple videos that had millions of views that were being monetized. I was like, people are out there monetizing your content. So either you're going to do it or someone else is going to do it.
Okay, so let's talk about YouTube first, and we'll get into all the other streams in a little, royalty streams in a little bit, and different rights in a little bit. But let's first talk with YouTube. Can you break down how people make money on YouTube? How artists and songwriters make money on YouTube?
Yeah. The funny thing about YouTube is there is like this whole back end that people don't. It's not really transparent. People don't know this, but in the back end of YouTube is the CMS, content management system. There are sound recording assets and there are composition assets. And many times composition assets are embedded into sound recording assets, similar to, you know, a sound recording copyright also has the publishing copyright inside of it. So in the back end of YouTube is kind of a whole little world of a bunch of assets that get claimed or get stuck onto videos and linked to those videos, whether that be like it is an actual music video and it has the content from start to finish, or it's a funny reaction video, or it's a compilation video and there's a 15 second snippet of that sound recording. Now what gets a little bit complicated as an if you're an independent artist, you're like, how do I know that this is being collected for? Is it being collected for? Major label and major and artists that are signed by major publishers, it's like, okay, they know their label and their publisher is collecting for it.
Sure.
But when it comes more into the indie space, you really have to, you have to opt in to monetize on the sound recording side and also have somebody collect your publishing rights in the back end of YouTube. And it kind of all just lives behind the scenes. And it's not something that you can see necessarily always from the outside. You can't click on a video that has your song. Sometimes it doesn't say collected by.
Well, that was my next question is how can I check on this? Because for instance, like, you know, I have access as an artist to YouTube Studio. I log in there. I can see all my analytics and insights. I even am monetizing my YouTube channel. I can log in and see some money that I've made from my videos, but that's not what you're talking about, right? That's
correct.
A totally different. Okay.
Yeah. We're talking about a different thing.
Right. And so if I'm an artist and I release music that I wrote, because just to clarify what you said before, the publishing, which it means songwriting, if I wrote a song and I recorded that song, so I own both copyrights to that, both the recording, the sound recording copyright, and the publishing, the composition copyright, because I wrote the song and I recorded it. How do I check to make sure that that money is flowing to me? Is there somewhere I can log into the back end of YouTube? Like, what is the CMS system? Do I have access to this?
Correct. So the regular person does not have access to this. There are even like major publishing companies that don't have their own CMS. So the answer to that is short, no, but there are some checks and balances that you can do. So let's say that you were to upload a video on your YouTube channel. Like you said, you're a YouTube partner. You have the ability to monetize. Many times when you upload a video with copyrighted content that's in the content ID system, you get that fun little email saying, "Hi, you have copyrighted content in your video." A lot of people sometimes freak out about that because they're like, "Wait, no, this is my music." Like, yeah, I'm the one who's uploading it. But that's actually good. That's ensuring that CD Baby is collecting your sound recording on your behalf. So like, it's great. Like, you don't have to worry about it. And there are a lot of, there's some more nuances on the publishing side of things. So you would possibly need an administrator to be collecting on that behalf. But CD Baby, TuneCore, some of these distributors do offer publishing collection, which is another thing we can get into. But so on those fronts, you can kind of check what's going on. I mean, my recommendation would be if you have your content distributed through a distributor, maybe think, hey, can they also collect for my publishing on the back end? Like, if this is something that you kind of want to be hands-free and you don't want to have to deal with it. Many of the distributors these days have that offering to collect.
So I just want to
content ID and publishing in the back end of YouTube.
Great. So yeah, so I want to clarify this because, as an artist, when I release a song through a distributor, you're using CD Baby as an example, but there's, you know, tons and tons of other distributors out there. I have a comparison on Ari's Take of 20 of some of the biggest ones out there, like, you know, DistroKid, Symphonic, Amuse, et cetera, et cetera. TuneCore, of course. So all these distributors will have theoretically an opt-in to say, like, do you want me to collect, do you want us to collect your YouTube sound recording revenue? And that, just so I understand this, is anytime that recording is used on any video in YouTube, whether the artist uploads it or not, the distributor is going to go out and essentially what you mean by claim it is, I'm just trying to understand how the money is made. They're going to slap an ad on that video, and then all the money that's generated from that ad from that video is going to get paid out to whoever claims the rights of that song. Is that right?
Correct, yes. So in that instance, if you enabled and allowed your distributor to do that, those earnings will come in on your statements from your distributor.
Now, how is it, because I believe YouTube, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe YouTube pays out 55% of the ad revenue to the rights holders. Is that right? Is it 55%? Do you know?
I mean, that does sound right. I mean, in my previous like experience, the master side pays out a lot more than like the publishing right. side. But I would definitely have to double check on the exact.
Like, well, that was my next question. So right. if let's just say, because I believe that was the last number that I saw, was of yeah. all the money that YouTube makes in revenue for that, the ads on this video that's using your recording, your song. Let's say they keep 45%, they pay out 55%. And what you're saying is a big portion of that is going to whoever represents the sound recording. So that would be the distributor. And then a little portion of that is going to whoever represents the publishing, the composition, basically whoever wrote the song and their publishers, their representatives. Is that correct?
Correct. And then there's a small portion that also gets paid out to the PROs. So, trying to like visualize it. So in the back,
That would be under the publishing umbrella though, right?
No, actually. So under YouTube, there is like synchronization. Okay. There's mechanical and then there's performance. But in this case, what's super funny that YouTube kind of is a little bit confusing. The sync is like the master, like rights collection. And then there can still be the publisher, let's say Cobalt, collecting for a writer, but then for the performance side of the royalties will be BMI, for example. The writer is represented by BMI. So there's a bunch of pieces of the pie in the back end that are being collected on your behalf. So essentially the BMI portion, if you were signed with BMI, would also be collected.
Right. So this is why it's a little bit more confusing than how royalties work on, let's say, Spotify, because that's audio only. But you mentioned because YouTube has video in it, that now is dealing with sync, and that's a totally different set of rights and royalties and all that stuff. Just so we don't lose people real quick, everyone is only really concerned with how do I get paid? How do I get my money? You know, and like, I want to know where every penny is going, every fraction of a penny. Like personally, like you and I could probably geek out on this all day and just be like, whoa, what percentage is going to the performance royalties? And then how that broken down to the mechanicals and da, 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 sing, da, da. Basically, for the artists, the indie artists that are listening that self-release their music through a distributor, like ones we've mentioned or whatever, break down how they can make sure they're getting all of their money from YouTube when their songs are being used anywhere on YouTube.
Correct. So, I know, and you can get really into the weeds, and then I don't want to lose anybody and got to write it back. but I love that you're interested in it because I am too. So let's say, like artist A, is using CD Baby to distribute their record. When they're going through the final stages of submit the distribution for the album, let's say, there's like a question that's like, do you want to enable Content ID? So that would be the opt-in for them to represent the sound recording side. When you go into further steps, they also, for example, will offer you CD Baby Publishing Pro. They've changed the name a couple times, but it's their publishing offering within CD Baby's distribution. So that is an instance where you could enable the publishing collection on the back end of YouTube. But now let's say you don't want to do that. You don't want to do publishing through your distributor. Then you can take the route.
Not all distributors offer publishing. And CD Baby, just to clarify, they actually stopped their publishing services about 6 months ago.
And there's a whole, they
now have a CD Baby Boost is what it's called, which it includes some of the services, but not the full publishing suite that they had. So they actually don't call it publishing anymore. It's they don't work with Songtrust anymore. They've severed those ties. They don't offer the mechanical royalty collection anymore. So it's a little bit different. I don't know if they do. Collect, and I don't know if they still collect the publishing part of the YouTube royalties, which they may do. But let's just for
Boost, yeah,
right. So just for ease, let's pretend we're using DistroKid, which has zero publishing options. They never have publishing. They don't have publishing. Let's just use that for ease right now. So you distribute through DistroKid, and there's no publishing up. You do opt in for the YouTube part of it, right? The content ID, it's YouTube. And then what?
Yes. And then from there, you can collect the YouTube backend of publishing through a publishing administrator, such as Songtrust, Centric, maybe you're with Cobalt. They also have access to represent your copyright and publishing in the backend of YouTube. So that would probably be the next step in making sure, and that's more of on like the publishing, the PRO side, that's a separate service completely.
Okay. And to be clear, if you, because songwriters think that the only thing they need to do to get their songwriter money, to their publishing money, and for everyone listening, if this is like your introduction to royalties and stuff like that, when Jamie and I talk about publishing, it means songwriting. They're used interchangeably. Publishing equals songwriting. So like people throw around publishing and songwriters get confused. They're like, wait, what does publishing mean? That means my recordings, right? That means when I release. No. So like we have to, when we say publishing, we mean songwriting. It's the same thing. We're going to use that term and we're going to throw it around. And then recording, Jamie said sound recording a few times. That is the legal definition of what a recording is. So just to clarify this so we can keep going with this conversation so nobody is confused. If Jamie writes a song and I record it and release it under my name, I own the recording of the song, but Jamie owns the publishing because Jamie wrote the song. She has now publishing on it. She has the publishing. I have the sound recording. That's like the two copyrights that we're talking. Okay. So moving forward to that. So, and you mentioned some, what I was getting back to is songwriters think the only thing they have to do to collect their songwriter money is register with a PRO, performing rights organization, like a BMI reference or an ASCAP in the States or in the UK, that's PRS or whatever. But what you're saying is that the PROs are not really collecting that money, all of your publishing money from YouTube. Is that right?
Correct. So you would need an administrator to opt into that kind of service for collection on the back end, as well as the mechanical royalties, maybe even neighboring rights. There's a lot more than just, I have a PRO and I'm done, right? It's not the case.
Got it. Okay. So for clarity, and just to name some, so you named a few of like Songtrust, Centric, that's Centric, for people looking it up. TuneCore Publishing also has an admin publishing offering. You don't have to distribute through TuneCore to use TuneCore Publishing. I want to clarify that. You used Cobalt. Cobalt is invite only, but there's a bunch of these services out there. Cool. So if I'm an artist and I release my music through a distributor and I select that content ID, YouTube opt-in, and I work with an admin publisher like a TuneCore Publishing or something like that, and I'm registered with a PRO like ASCAP, you're saying now I'm going to collect all of my YouTube money. Is that kind of right?
Yes. That would be correct.
Okay.
And then there's a third option that some people, sometimes it makes sense for them, but it's more of like a production music library. There are third-party companies that focus just on YouTube collection. So that's ad rev, exploration, Orpheum. And these are just companies that are solely focused on helping collect sound recording and like the publishing and also audio visual on YouTube. But that doesn't really make sense for the average like independent artist to then add another company into the mix for like a third party situation. But that is another option that I wanted to make sure I mentioned.
Well, no, I'm glad you did because, let's dig into that a little bit because I've been confused on what how ad rev or something differs from from the label or distributor collecting the sound recording royalties and the publisher collecting the publishing royalties. What is ad rev collecting? Like, why would somebody use ad rev over just doing what you just suggested, which is having their distributor collect and having their publisher collect?
Correct. So think of it as like their sole purpose. Some of these companies, they have a lot of like eggs in the basket. They're collecting, they're distributing your music. They also have, maybe they even have like a creative team who's also pitching your music to Spotify. There's a lot of things, but with these companies that are YouTube focused only, they have whole departments that are just focused on making sure the sound recordings are getting claimed. If there are any conflicts that come up between rights owners on the sound recording side, and then as well as on the publishing side. So they're a little bit more, I would say, niche, hands-on if there are more complicated situations for, and that's why like production music companies sometimes use them, and like labels, you know, they would like to use like a person direct because maybe they have an issue where a lot of people try and rip off their artist's music, and they want to, you know, be talking to a person just about their YouTube problems. Gotcha. So I feel like it's just like a more hands-on experience.
No, that's great. Everybody. And that's helpful. So, because there's a lot of, I know there's indie labels listening to this right now that are, that want to get all of their stuff buttoned up. And what you're saying is basically in, if there's an indie label, instead of them using their distributor to collect their YouTube revenue, they can actually work with one of these YouTube content management companies to like supersede their distributor, be like, hey, distributor, don't collect my YouTube money. AdRev's going to go do that for me. Is that right?
Yeah. And I mean, in many cases, let's say you're a label, you could even negotiate like a more favorable rate. So let's say you have an 85-15 with a distributor, but you know that this chunk of YouTube revenue is actually something that you make a lot of money at. You could go to one of these companies and be like, hey, can you give me a 90-10 deal for my YouTube revenue? Here is some, you know, previous statements on what we've been bringing in. And oftentimes, if the revenue is above a certain threshold, you can get a more favorable deal going direct.
That's a good point, because I'm like literally on my website now where I have this comparison of all the distributors, because I know we have included in here the commission that all these distributors take for YouTube. Oh, here we go. Yeah, CD Baby takes 30% for Content ID. DistroKid takes 20%.
Differs.
Yeah, and let's see, TuneCore takes 20%, Symphonic takes 15-20%. So that's a good point. If you know, you're a label and you're making some significant revenue on on YouTube, one of these third party content YouTube management companies could do it. Now, can you name them again? I know AdRev because they made all the headlines because they were the ones that actually helped these fraudsters get all that money, and they kind of got thrown under the bus a little bit because they were the vehicle to really helping these Latin operatives steal all this money. But what are some of the other ones too that you know of?
Exploration, and then there's Orpheum, and that's spelled with an O, Orpheum. Yeah, and there's honestly, there's probably more out there since I've known about all of them. I mean, it's a very popular space to be in. It's a nice business to be a middleman to, you know, manage rights.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really been paying attention to the space in like really actively in like 10 years, because 10 years ago, it was all the rage, you know, you know, 10, 12 years ago when like, every, you know, all the artists were breaking out on YouTube and everything like, and there were like, you know, maker studios and like all of these companies that were that managed creators on YouTube, and that was all the rage. Now it's just evolved a lot more, but I know that there are still companies out there that focus on that, so I wanted to kind of clear that up. So this kind of leads me to just to close this part of the conversation on YouTube, because it's important, and there's a lot of money there, literally billions of dollars YouTube is paying out each year in some of this revenue, so you want to make sure you get it. So just to recap, if I'm an artist, I can opt in through my distributor's Content ID YouTube program. I can use an admin publisher, and then I'm pretty much set when my recordings and songs will get claimed. Oh, I did have a question about that. How is YouTube able to claim compositions? So like using the example before of your song that I recorded, I'm essentially recording a cover song. If you have a publisher and you're like, hey, publisher, can you go collect all of my money from YouTube for my songs? How is YouTube able to know if I like slow it down and I'm singing it in a different key? Like how can they even tell?
No, that's a really great question. Some of these companies like these, and that's like a good actual example for maybe why you would push for a middleman company, because they use fingerprinting software that even if the song is like a cover, it's still using sometimes the sound recording as the original reference. But many times these companies actually place manual claims on videos. So,
Say it again.
Manual claims on these videos.
Manual claims.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So what that means is it's not an auto claim from YouTube system because they didn't recognize it. There's a whole set of, processes that these companies go through. And like, let's say they know that they represent a very big copyright. Maybe it's even a legacy one. They have employees that their full-time job is just to manually claim these hot videos on YouTube with like tons of views of covers. And then if it's using the original sound recording, then that publishing will always be tied to it. But you're right, in these instances where the music is changed, slowed down, it's a cover song or it's very muffled, that's a gray area, honestly. Like unless somebody is manually putting that claim, it's up to the Content ID system.
Gotcha. Okay. Real quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space. And let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder. And yeah, they're very innovative. And when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative. And they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Too Lost is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for $100,000 or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register you with SoundExchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue, they have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out TooLost. You can just go to TooLost.com, use the promo code ARISTAKE for 3 months free and try them out. Let them know what you think. Great. Thank you. Then this has really cleared it up for YouTube royalties, which actually brings me to my next part when we're talking cover songs and the difference between composition and sound recording and all of that. I want to start to now talk about some other platforms that is, I would argue maybe not more relevant, but at least in terms of kind of marketing these days and is taking up a lot of press. When we talk about TikTok or Instagram Reels or something like that, I want to kind of understand if that is, because YouTube is way older. Mm-hmm. They're like the grandfathers of this space. They've been around since 2006 or something and have like really been monetizing since, I don't know, 2008, 2009, something like that. They've really, you know, TikTok and Instagram, Facebook, you know, they're newer. Mm-hmm. Are they monetizing? Because I don't know if I've ever seen a way to get paid from TikTok or Instagram or Facebook, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big thing is that just like YouTube, when it came around, there were a lot of like issues for them to, you know, sort through because scanning through millions and billions of videos to make sure that there's like some kind of content ID tracking system. This is still like these newer companies are still in the process of actually like solidifying how this works. I know that in my like a couple years ago when I was working at a YouTube rights management company, Facebook was in its early stages of figuring out how they were going to approach this. How are they going to pay everyone out? And when that, the first initial result of that was paying out market share. So giving just a big blanket check to these big stakeholders in the music industry being like, hey, here's a big load amount of money. Thank you for letting us have your content on our platform. And hopefully that's okay. Now that leaves out a huge, huge like amount of these independent artists who are not repped by these larger companies. So I think that specifically on the Facebook front, that is still being developed. And I would say that there are a lot of pieces of content that are going unmonetized. And then, you know, Twitter, for example, has yet to pay any kind of monetary value for music on their platform. And similar to Instagram and TikTok, they have a little bit better content ID systems. So like, you know, even if you upload your own original audio, they have audio matching, you know, to scan. That's a Drake song. Like, sure, you maybe added some more sounds, but like, that's a Drake song.
Right. Yeah, I used to call those payoffs from the social media companies to the to the labels and the publishers as like bribes. Basically, like, we haven't figured this out yet.
Yeah,
here's a boatload of money to just go away for 3 years while we will, you know, and they like promise to like to figure it out. It's basically like just go away while we pretend to figure this out, but like, how's $100 million? And the majors are like, great, that really helps us out. Whereas the indies get paid nothing from that because they're not, or maybe like very, very little. And like the indies are kind of just like, I guess, you know, whatever scraps you want to throw away. You know, even though theoretically, even if you are repped by an indie like admin publisher, I haven't heard of any of those songwriters that really got paid from those bribes, those payoffs, or anything like that. But like that happened like 10 years ago with Facebook, and I've yet to hear of anybody seeing some meaningful revenue on an ongoing basis from any of Facebook Meta's properties like Instagram or anything like that, like we do see from YouTube.
Yeah, definitely. There is a point to be said that I know that labels and also distributors have their direct deals with Facebook. So I wouldn't say off the blanket, like no one's getting paid, because I can't say that because I'm not I'm not in the internal workings of, let's say, a distributor that has their direct deals with Facebook. But I do know that in the back end of some of your statements from a distributor, you might get $30 from TikTok. And I'm using that number mm-hmm. because I literally saw that number on my artist's recent statement, which is hilarious. And you're getting paid based off of the usages of your content on the platform. But that's not necessarily the publishing side. So let's say you have a delivered audio from your recent track that you released last Friday.
Yep.
Let's say it's blown up and there's 40,000 TikToks created with that sound. You can get paid for that through your distributor because your distributor delivered that content to TikTok. So that's how that tracking system works on the master side.
So it doesn't, so unlike streaming, unlike Spotify, Apple Music, where they pay per stream, what you're mm-hmm. saying is that it's paid per number of videos that use the song in their video?
Yeah. Which seems so like funny had, and a little bit backwards because yeah. let's say it's a video with 200 million views. You're like, that's a right. lot of money, right? And you're like, no, that's not necessarily how they do all the math in the back end.
Wow. So just if I understand this, a song that is on a video with 200 million views is going to make less money than on videos than if that song was on let's say 100,000 different videos that collectively got fewer than yeah. maybe a million total views or whatever.
Yeah. Because they don't see as, and I don't really know why that's how they value it. Honestly, I think it's kind of absurd.
Yeah,
but
it doesn't make sense.
That's what the calculations will be in the back end. If you were to decide to go through all the calculations of your very detailed export from your distributor, yeah. for example.
Have you done that? Have you figured out like how much, like, can you calculate that for me? Like what is number of videos on TikTok earn for the recording? Like you used the example of $30 that you saw in a statement. How many videos? Yeah.
I should go back and actually download the detailed statement because what I can do is I can filter it by the platform, TikTok. And then yeah. the 0.0005 times usage, I could probably calculate that. I just see the $30 and I kind of just chuckle.
Right. Well, it's all relative because someone would see $30 and like, oh, wow, that could be a lot of money for yeah. somebody who only has a few streams or videos. So it's like, that's why I want to know like, okay, what does that mean? $30 for, 10 video usages, 10 million video usages, 10 million stream, it's all relative. Yeah. So yeah, I'd be curious what that means, but yeah. Okay. Cool. So speaking of TikTok, I know you're, also an artist manager and, one of your artists, Ryan Nealon, is he independent?
Yes, he's independent. He has a distribution deal, but it's fully independent.
Fully independent. So he owns, all of his music. Now I noticed, one of his videos on TikTok got over a million views. It's pinned to the top of his TikTok profile. And they're like, it's a very dramatic scene that I'm watching these three people mm-hmm. in a car listening to this song. The person in the comments are like, oh my gosh, the girl in the back is holding on for dear life. She's like crying and like, they're all, I think, I can't hear anything because yeah. it's muted. And I was like, what are they listening to? What is this song? I really want to hear the song. What happened? Because we all know that Universal pulled all their music from TikTok, but your artist is independent. So tell me what's going on here.
Yeah. I was fearing that this day would come, so it wasn't a complete shock, but I did wake up okay. to my artist, Ryan, texting me saying, maybe expletives, tell you about her is muted along with another song that he has. And I was like, okay, so this is the day we're going to have. Surely because one of the songwriters that he collaborated to create that track is signed to a publisher that is under the umbrella of UMPG. So not even like
whoa,
directly signed to UMPG. It impacts everybody who's underneath the umbrella that happens to run through UMPG's pipes if you're a songwriter.
Oh my gosh.
And like, if you sit back and think of that, like, I know that everybody has their opinions on the stance that Universal is taking, but you're thinking mm-hmm. about, isn't this the opposite of what we're wanting to do? Like, you are impacting such a huge community of the music world by this decision. And it's like,
yeah,
it's a trickle down effect. Like, it's going to mm-hmm. impact so many people, mm-hmm. and fundamentally change what these artists have to do to promote their new songs. You know, Ryan has built a large following on like the streaming platforms from what he has built on TikTok. And so mm-hmm. that's an interesting strategy that we need to kind of shift, kind of figure out, okay, his next song is written with that said writer. That is also under the UMPG umbrella of this whole situation. And like, mm-hmm. you better believe that I was like, okay, maybe we just don't register the song yet. And that is like big coming from me, the queen of like, register it as soon as possible.
Registration. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So right.
like, it's giving me some like second thoughts and stuff. Because Whoa. His song is going to come out in, right. you know, next month, and we need to promote it. We need to promote it before the song comes out. We need to promote it once it's out using the sound. Yeah. So it's actually forcing people to maybe do things that they would not rather otherwise recommend. Therefore, me.
Oh, man. See, this is the whole thing. And this is why the situation frustrates me so much, because Universal's actions are affecting independent artists, emerging artists that have nothing and want nothing to do with Universal.
Exactly.
And like, you know, a friend of mine, he is signed to an independent label that just happens to be distributed by Universal. So Universal does not even own the copyrights. They're just using it for distribution. And he didn't even realize, and I don't know, I mean, this is diving a little bit deeper into the drama, but like when the letter came out that Universal wrote saying that TikTok, one of TikTok's negotiating strategies was to remove some of their smaller artists while leaving the superstars up during this negotiation process, like back in December, he got caught up in this. And so he woke up one day, this is before any of the news broke, before anyone knew what was happening, and all of his songs were muted on TikTok. Nobody had any idea what was going on. He asked me, it's just like, what's happening? And like, you know, he's an emerging indie artist that was using TikTok as a promotional platform, and all of his songs got muted, and then he didn't know what was going on, and finally it came out, and now because Universal distributes his independent label's music, all of his stuff is removed, all the songs are muted, all of his videos are muted, all the songs are removed, and he was very public about this, I'm not like, but he had a full-on panic attack when like seeing all of his music gone from this, his most important promotional platform that he has been building up his audience on. And it's like, it is having real human devastating effects to these artists. And like, what just pisses me off with like all of these talking heads and all these lawyers and all of these people at the top is like, you're affecting humans. Like, we are artists. Like, what you're doing in your boardrooms and like in your lawyer negotiating, like, it's so arrogant and it's so frustrating, because like, you are actually hurting real artists. And it's like, this is not the right tactic. And I know, you know, the RIA and NMPA and all the labels and Lucian Grange at Universal, they're all going to disagree. And they're like, well, we got to do it. Like, they're not paying their fair. It's like, but in the meantime, you are causing artists to have panic attacks. You are causing them to not be able to market their music, to to literally lose tons of money in marketing that they have now put into trying to figure this whole thing out. And that is devastating. And that is the wrong tactic. Like, that is the same mentality that all the labels had in the early 2000s during Napster era of suing the fans. Oh, well, it's our right to do it. It's our copyright. So let's go sue music's biggest fans. It's like, no, that's not. get more creative with how to approach this. It just drives me insane. It's the same tactic that they took 12 years ago with ripping all the music down from YouTube. It's like, guys, this is the most powerful promotional platform of our time. Yeah. In 2007, that was YouTube, and the majors like muted all the music from YouTube. It's like, that was the wrong move. And now they're doing the same thing from TikTok. It's the wrong move. And it, like, they need to figure out a smarter, better way to do this. And when they're getting paid on usage, $30, I mean, okay, I understand there's not that money right now, but we're seeing the direct effect. We're seeing that, like your artist said, you know, going, like having a success on TikTok, at least generating that kind of visibility is directly driving people to listen to it on paid streaming services.
Right. Yeah. It's at the fundamental core for artists and even creators of all sorts of fields. It is a tool that they need, they're using to get themselves out there. What used to be playing open mic nights every single night in your local city, maybe in the early 2000s, is now using TikTok to find the audience. Like, it is a tool. And I mean, for some people, they do make money maybe at the end of the penny counting of like the usages of, you know, on TikTok. But at the end of the day, the value is not coming from the money that's made directly on TikTok always. It's, it's the value that is made on Spotify. You know, the people who are coming to their shows on tour because that person found you on TikTok. Like, they become an actual super fan, not just like a TikTok follower.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, the problem with how kind of the industry functions right now is because the majors deal on macro numbers. So to them, when you look at $30 for one of your artists and you roll your eyes and you're just like, well, this is, you know, we're not making our money from TikTok, but it's driving fandom and we can see those ticket sales and we can see, you know, that money coming in from streaming services. The majors, you know, you multiply that $30 times, you know, hundreds of thousands of their artists and millions of, you know, copyrights, and that actually is significant, and they want that to be a bigger piece of the pie. Whereas, like, they're not looking at artists. Like, whenever major labels have never cared about artists, and I don't care who hears that. Like, it's just true. They don't care about artists. They care about money. They care about, you know, making their books work at the end of the day. And so it's like, they're looking at copyrights, they're looking at royalties, they're looking at spreadsheets. They're not thinking about how do we develop artists, because also because they're not participating in, you know, ticket sales or live revenue for the artists that are not assigned to 360 deals and whatnot. Like, they don't care if it hurts fandom. They don't care that it is actually hurting their career in the long term. They want to get paid more now to make their books work out in the end. And so, like, I don't buy it when, you know, the majors are saying, like, well, you know, we care about artists and we're looking out for the artist's best interest and we're fighting for our artists. It's like, bullshit, you are. Like, you wouldn't be taking these tactics if you cared about artists. Talk to your artists. See what they actually think.
Yeah, no, 100%. That's always my joke. And it's like, oh, so now the company with, like, almost the entire major stake in the music industry is being like, we care about the small guys. Like, that's so funny. But that's like Universal's like PR team. They're like, people will love this. Like, we're gonna tell them this, and then
give me a break.
But then also at the same time, outrage like millions of like independent artists. Like,
right? What? Yeah. All of it is so frustrating, and it's just like, you know, it would be one thing if it was just Universal fucking over their own artists, then they would have to answer to their own artists. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they're doing this to like your independent client because he co-wrote a song with a songwriter who happened to be signed to Universal, the fact that he's doing it to my friend who they just use Universal for distribution, like, that is excessive. Like, that is, you know, Universal, they're not winning over any fans by doing this in the music industry. I hope they realize this. They probably don't care because they're surrounded by yes men and lawyers who are like, well, this is going to work and this is how we do it. We just sue our way out of these things. And it's just like, or we pull our way, you know, music and we'll show you. It's just like, but that's just the wrong tactic. And when you're really hurting your artists, that's just like, There's a better way. Just get a little bit more creative. Maybe bring artists into the conversation instead of just your lawyers, and you'd figure out a creative solution here.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they'll listen to you.
Rant over.
Loved it.
So cool. Well, I want to get back to the let's talk about you as an artist manager and with like your independent artist, just for the time, because I'm curious, like, you know, as an artist manager for an independent artist like Ryan, you know, what is the approach right now in terms of kind of building the career? Like, you know, there's so many different directions artists can take right now. And, you know, I feel like we've been spending a lot of time talking about TikTok. That seems to be the avenue that at least in kind of the mainstream music industry, so many people are going for. But I'm curious, like, what your approach is at kind of developing this emerging artist.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we're really lucky and blessed that he does also have an Instagram following, like, especially during these trying times. So definitely just like optimizing all kinds of platforms. It's really our focus. And I mean, I want us to dive into some of the other platforms that we've got going on, like, YouTube. There's so many things that you could dive into. But a big part is, you know, making sure he has the means to just stay consistent and creating music and getting it out there. In this past year, he went from having about like under 1,000 followers on Spotify to 45,000 followers. And that is quite literally from
incredible
the consistency and growth of his catalog. So now our main job and goal is just feed those fans like more music. They're ready. They're excited to hear him. You know, I'm very lucky that he loves and knows how to like create videos, and he loves social media. Love hate situation, but it's not kind of a situation where I'm having to like bang down his door every day, like, make sure you make that TikTok. Like, he put the work
in.
And I do think that's partially from him. You know, he's been in LA for 10 years. He's been playing the hotel cafe. He's been doing the thing, and I have to remind him that it wasn't until about a year and 2 months ago, or maybe anyway, like a year and like 4 months ago, no one really knew outside of his little space in LA who he was and what his music was. So it's like, I have to like reinvigorate him to be like, this is a new process. You are now in the beginning of your journey, of this new cycle of people like wanting to listen to your music, coming to your shows. It's a very exciting time for me to be a part of. I've actually really enjoyed the whole process. I'm just being like, this is a journey. Like, although there have been viral, exciting moments, that those are great.
Yeah.
We have to like still think of this is like what's going to happen in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. It's not going to be like it all happens like that. Although it sometimes seems like some of these artists, it feels like it, but most of them have been doing it. Like, I'm sure, you know, like, the community here in LA, they've been doing it for so long.
And that's really great perspective that you said he's been gigging and touring or doing his thing for 10 years and releasing music. And you know, it's, I think, you know, we unfortunately, the press fawns over these, like, you know, seemingly overnight success stories, or the youngest of the young, when you're like Billie Eilish and Olivia Rodrigo, and that's what they're celebrating. It's like, okay, well, if I don't make it by 30, am I dead? Am I over? But, like, you know, that's why I thought Victoria Monet's, you know, Grammy acceptance speech for Best New Artist, she's 34 and she won Best New Artist. And it's like, yeah, it's it's funny because she's not a new artist. She's right. Like she said, she'd been doing it for 15 years.
Exactly.
But like, you know, to like the superstar industry, to the Grammy industry, she's a new artist or whatever. So yeah, it's really great perspective. And it's nice to see that Ryan's having kind of this recognition now after, you know, doing it and grinding and hustling and cutting his teeth and doing the thing. When you say like, regularly releasing music and content and stuff like that. Let's talk about that just briefly. You know, what is your release strategy with an artist like Ryan?
Definitely. Well, what's helpful first is that the songs exist. You know, it's easy to say, oh, we're going to try and get on a release cadence of a new song every 5 to 6, 7 weeks. You know, that actually in itself is a feat because producer fees alone, like for an independent artist, it's hard. Like a song could cost anywhere from $1,500 to, you know, astronomical amounts, but $1,500 or like, yeah, a couple thousand dollars just to get that one song done. So it's been like baby steps and like trying to figure out what is realistic, not only for obviously the creative side, but literally the logistical budget side of like, how can we pay this song and like, be it done, mixed, mastered, done, ready for submission. So that's like the first process of figuring out what that cadence looks like for you as an independent artist. You know, some artists don't have any funding. They have a day job, maybe even two, and they're like really just scraping by and they, you know, they do a lot of IOU situations with their producers or like, here, please, you can collect 50% until we start making money. So that's like our first thing is like really analyzing where he was at. And you know, that continues to change as the career changes and opportunities come in. And then, yeah, being strategic about being at the forefront of these DSPs. You know,
what does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, so his release about 2 years ago, Bring You Home, was like the first inkling of like kind of some buzz online and some attention on the DSPs and like some growth in streaming. And then he had Feel Good, which is his song where it really all changed everything. From there on out, it was important for us to have some kind of consistent cadence, but it's going to look different for every artist because like I said, budget gets in the way, you know, means of creating a song gets in the way. But what I mean by keeping on the forefront of the DSPs is like, now that we've had some fuel in the fire, he's gotten some playlists last year on Spotify. He just started getting some love on Apple Music. Like the last thing we want to do is stop the releasing. This is like the perfect time to be staying consistent, making sure to sell the story and, you know, share and connect with every single new fan he gets. The exciting thing about that is he can have a release, like the release you were talking about, Tell You About Her. He got a great amount of like new fans on Instagram connecting with him. So it's like every time something happens, it's like refresh the story, make sure you introduce yourself, connect with the fans, and then let them know what's coming next. And it's kind of like a fun cycle that sometimes is like, okay, the song's finally done. We've submitted, but like now it's on to the next one to make sure it's done in enough time to submit to the distributor. I love that stuff, but I know that creatives are like, you're too much. Like, can we just enjoy the song?
Yeah, I mean, it can be exactly. And I, you know, I think it's challenging for a lot of artists, especially who grew up, you know, loving and listening to albums, whereas like they want to, you know, create a body of work and then they release that body of work. And, you know, the traditional thinking, traditional as of like the last five, seven years of streaming thinking is like, you have to feed the algorithm and like release music, you know, every 5, 6 weeks or something like that and build on that momentum because that is what the DSPs, the streaming services prefer. And that is what helps, you know, that momentum building. And yeah, that is a challenge because artists are like, well, I just released an album. That's the next 3 years, traditionally, but not really anymore.
Yeah. And last fall, actually, it was December. Yeah, it was December. End of last year, Ryan did end up releasing his album. He basically was like, I know stuff is happening right now, but I want to stick to my plan. Like my plan was I had a body of work of songs.
Yeah.
In the middle, things kind of got crazy and heated up, but like, I'm still going to continue with my plan. You know, I think that some, you know, maybe other labels or managers or other opinions in the room might be like, you know, it's too early. Like, why release an album? Like, just keep doing the single game, play the single game until, you know, there's really hype behind you. I'm like, here's my thing is that like, no one's going to enjoy it if they're doing it the way that other people want them to do it. Like, the reason why we're in this, whether you're an artist or a creator or on the business side, is because like at the core, you love it. I can't say that for all of the business people, but I would say that for the artists, like, what is the purpose of them releasing this? Like, it's because they want to share the music in the way that it's true to them. So I would definitely say that, like, I've had lots of interesting conversations recently, you know, versus the single versus like, this is a body of work. Like, I wrote these songs during a period in my life, and it's important to me that they are together in like a product. But it's very interesting. And I mean, I'm interested to see how it's going to change in the coming years, because I don't necessarily know if I like this pumping out singles game. Like, I don't know. As a fan, as a music fan, I'm not sure.
Oh, totally. I mean, yeah, singles are for the algorithm. Albums are for the fans and for the artist, when you really break it down.
Yeah. I mean, especially, it's like, how many times did I, like, I've shuffled Renee Rapp's album? Like, I don't even care. I'll be like, I want to sit and listen to music. I will literally go to her an album and play the album. But like, I actually don't, I feel like I have less and less those kind of experiences over time. Like, I've fewer and fewer.
I do feel like we are getting to a tipping point where this singles economy, the way that you know, we have monetized recorded music, it's not sustainable for anyone, really. Yes, the, you know, maybe the majors, but when we're talking on a human level, it's not sustainable for artists, it's not sustainable for fans. It's just, we have to, I think we are moving towards a place where the artist-fan relationship, that is going to deepen, and we're going to become more focused on how to develop that and monetize that relationship versus how to try to collect as many royalties from streams as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And like, how to, you know, instead of like trying to get a massive bucket to like catch every single fraction of a penny from where all they exist. Like, yeah, but why not actually capture some dollars directly from our fans that want to support their favorite artists? We haven't really done a good job as an industry at facilitating that relationship and monetizing that relationship. And I there are some platforms that are starting to kind of pop up that do a good job of that. And I think that is going to be the next phase of the industry is fandom and monetizing that fan artist relationship versus just trying to play the algorithm game on streaming.
Yeah. I think it gives also so many independent artists more chances to have a living wage doing what they love. Like,
definitely.
Yeah, like, that's what you're saying, comparing like these pennies and this competition to get to the top, to get on this Spotify playlist. Like, what are we doing? What's going on?
Right.
Like, cause this can't be it. And like, people are sad and upset because their song came out, and like, you should be happy that the song is out and you're proud of it, but it didn't get any playlisting. Like, no.
Right.
This is so sad. Like, this is not what we should be doing. Yeah.
No, exactly. I totally agree. Exactly. Well, Jamie, this has been a fascinating conversation. It has been we went all over the place.
I
really enjoyed it. Thank you for coming on and you know, vibing with me on all of this and sharing your insight and knowledge across all of these important issues. There's one final question that I ask everyone who comes on the show, and what does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
Yeah. I believe what it means to make it in the new music business is first to define what success means to you, because that can mean different things to every single type of creator, artist, even business person in the music industry. I manage an artist who makes chill electronic music, lives in Redondo Beach, surfs, and he can fund his life off of his music. Is he a touring pop star? no, he doesn't want to be a touring pop star. So I feel like that is super important, is like align what your goals are and be very specific about it and then go chase after it.
Jamie, thank you so much. That was great.
Of course. I've had such a good time. Thank you.
Thanks. Today's episode was edited by Mikey Evans with music by Brassroots District and produced by all the great people at Ari's Take. This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.